Bin Laden was George Sr.'s clan not so long ago. Set George up with a retirement plan, lots of low-tax dough. Go down White House, way down in payoff land. Tell the CIA, leave the Saudis alone. There's oil and gas in Uzbekistan. Oil and gas must flow. So we depose the Taliban. Where'd Osama go? Bend down, Congress. Kneel down and lend a hand. Tell the people, liberty must go. There's more to gain in war than peace. Let the weapons flow. Destabilize the Middle East. Enrich the CEO. Go down, brother, way down on Florida sand. Tell the justices not to let my people vote. The VP had a heart attack, oily blood, you know. While he's still here, let's bomb Iraq, give the rubes a show. Lie down, people, lay down your Bill of Rights. Tell James Madison we had to let those amendments go. The opium crop was blown away. Let them poppies grow. Thanks to U.S. troops, it's back today. Only goes to show. Go down Wall Street, sell off my shares today. Tell my broker, put it all in blow.
Welcome and thank you for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and today's program is Obama on the Couch. Dr. Justin A. Frank is interviewed by Peter B. Collins. Dr. Justin Frank talks about his new book, Obama on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. Dr. Frank is a clinical professor of psychiatry at George Washington University and previously wrote Bush on the Couch.
Well, Dr. Frank, I just need to inject here, and I won't try to transfer my politics to you, but I think that the way they took out bin Laden was to protect a lot of blowback secrets from the past. His role in Afghanistan in the 1980s and whatever happened in the intervening years up until 2001 is pretty much off the books, and they want to keep it that way.
Okay, now this is where you are adding a deeper level, or not a deeper level, but a different level, that one of the weaknesses of psychoanalysis is that it doesn't take into account enough of what you're just saying, which is that it is a wish to silence so nobody will know how much money we had given bin Laden in the past, how involved we've been with him, how much we supported him in Afghanistan against Russia. All of those things, I agree with you completely. And I didn't address those things because I was really trying to look at the psychology of Obama. But what does fit in with what you're saying, still and keeping it psychoanalytic, is that he wants to turn the page. And he wants to turn the page on his own hatred. He wants to turn the page to the extent that he will not prosecute George Bush. He wants to turn the page that he will not prosecute any of the members of AIG or any of the government any of the people who were criminals, like Dick Cheney. He will not do that because he does not want to look at his own past. He does not want to stir up feelings that would lead to de-idealization of his parents.
And
he's
do you
not
think
going to let that happen. So I agree with you from a political point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You're even more right, and what you're saying is more important because it's like shutting up somebody so they won't spill the beans.
And on what you were just describing there, I get so frustrated. I find that phrase, turn the page, to be extremely condescending.
Totally.
And the idea is that he's the preacher, we're the choir, and we're going to turn the page, and we're all going to sing the same song next because I said so. And this leads to the best chapter title, at least that's my nomination, Chapter 5. The only thing we have to fear is change itself. I give you a lot of credit for the juxtaposition there. But what
I like that title, too.
What you described there, Dr. Frank, is the way he has turned on his base. And this is a dismissive attachment. I'm not qualified to make that analysis, but it appears that way to me.
Yes.
That we've become baggage to him. The people, the people who made the difference for him in Iowa, the people who were along with him on the contentious primary battle with Hillary Clinton, and who stayed with him because primarily he was against the war in Iraq. And that was the rallying point, among others, that really drew people to him.
Yes.
And he has now decided that we are non-essential. And Axelrod has a plan for him to get reelected without us. I don't see those numbers, but I'm sure there's a scheme somewhere.
Well, and we're not essential. We're irritants.
Okay.
And that's what really bothers me. And the thing is that if you really... the one thing that that I didn't explicitly say in the book, but that a friend of mine who read the book explicitly said that he got from the book, is the theme of seduce and abandon. It's there, but it's not really clearly stated, and that is that Obama, as a child, was seduced by myths about his father. He was seduced by the intense involvement of his mother and then abandoned. He learned about being seduced and abandoned, and he became a person who does it rather than has it done to him. He became a seducer and an abandoner. And one of the things that, and that's why he was actually susceptible in a way, in part, to Boehner. When they talked about the grand bargain and could play golf, Boehner actually seduced him into thinking he would go along with him, when he never was going to go along with him, ever. So the seducer gets seduced.
Well, and it's very interesting.
One of the things, just to stay with this point, though,
go ahead.
What he's done with the left is that why we become irritants to him is that there's an unconscious guilt towards the people you've abandoned, because you know you've hurt them. And he writes about that in his book, how he abandoned... I mean, his thing about this girl in the fourth grade, Coretta, who he betrayed, she could be just as easily you and me from the left, who he betrayed in order to belong to a group of Republicans and get along. The fact is that he felt very guilty eventually towards her. And I think that one of the things that happens is that if we criticize him or say, keep your promises, you promised you were going to close Guantanamo, you promised you were going to, you know, have transparency, he hears those not necessarily as urging him to continue, to help him, to give him strength. He hears them only as destructive attacks, and that's because he feels guilty.
And Dr. Frank, there's so much here. He cannot be unaware of the people who are camped out in public places and marching in the streets, challenging Wall Street because he failed to.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Recently, he denounced Bank of America for its heartless attempt to impose a $5 a month fee on debit card users. And I supported him in that rejection. But it pales in comparison to the crimes of Bank of America. And
totally.
he is there, facilitating their continual fleecing of the American people. More people are projected to be foreclosed on in the next year. And, his attempts to deal with it are so limited. And we know it. That's the real angst that is being expressed by these kind of leaderless, non-explicit demonstrations. And I'm sure that he gets it on a certain level. But how could he have gone to the Congressional Black Caucus at the end of September and lectured them to put on their marching shoes and shut up and stop whining when he failed to honor his pledge to put on his comfortable shoes and march with labor if it was ever under assault? He hasn't been to Madison, Wisconsin, and he only mentioned the struggle that labor is facing on Labor Day this year.
Well, first of all, I don't want to be too reductionistic, because that's the danger of psychoanalysis. But I have to be a little bit reductionistic here, and that is that he was doing to the Congressional Black Caucus what his mother was doing to him. stop whining, Barry. You have to do this. Stop whining, little boy, about having to do your homework. You have to do it. And then he was also mirroring his father, who said, turn off your TV, boy, and stop whining. And he has already done his homework. And the father said, well, do it for next week. That's in the book. So what he's doing is he's reliving and taking it out on his deepest and clearest supporters, because he is replaying this kind of parental terrible situation where he is demeaning in ways that he felt demeaned the very people who love him the most and want him to succeed, the way he loved his mother and his father the most and wanted them to be back together.
And those,
but he felt demeaned by them.
But those emotions are trumping the seducer role, because
yes,
the very people who he needs for his reelection next year are the people who he is stiff-arming.
Well, he'll start seducing again. He'll go back and forth, because I think the problem with having a mother and father the way like he had is that the mother and father sometimes are him, and his followers are little Barry. Other times, he's little Barry asking for their help. Please help me. And they become the critical mother who are saying, you're not doing your job right. So sometimes he's the one who's saying to the Congressional Black Caucus, you're not doing your job right. Other times he's hearing people on the left who he gets angry at who says that he's not doing his job right. It goes back and forth because the mother is a hot potato and they don't know what to do with her. I agree with you about seducing and abandoning, however, and I think that he is now trying to seduce the left by being tough. And the one thing I did suggest in the book he seems to be doing more of, which is naming names. When he was criticizing Congress before 2010 elections, he essentially sealed the fate of a lot of supporting constituents and supporting congressmen who had gone out of their way to support him. He just let them dangle and lose. And I think that now he has to really name the fact that it's certain members of Congress. It's not Congress that's dysfunctional. It's things that are being blocked regularly, and nobody knows what to do about it. That's true.
Well, Drew Weston published what I think was a pivotal piece in the New York Times, July, I think it was, or
yeah,
early
it was
August.
A great article, yes.
Where he really dinged Obama for his failure to establish an appropriate narrative at the beginning of his presidency, and it deals with the name calling that you just described. He needed to talk about the Republican deficit. He needed to talk about the failed Bush economic policies, and he would refer to it indirectly. Oh, you wouldn't believe what was on my desk when I got to the Oval Office. But he couldn't bring himself to say Bush and Cheney screwed us. He used the metaphor of driving a car into a ditch during the campaign. But once he was elected, and this is part and parcel with his refusal, I think it's criminal, to investigate and prosecute wrongdoing under Bush. Bush and Cheney in their books have admitted to torturing and to authorizing it. It's clearly actionable information. And here, Barry turned the page Obama says it's optional. The Constitution is an optional document, and the rule of law is optional, and he gets to make that decision.
And what I'm saying is the reason it's optional, one of the main reasons, stems from his wish to keep rose-colored glasses on about his own childhood, even though it was tough, and he was tough. When he can stand there and say his parents had an improbable love, or when he can stand there and not confront his mother or his father, who was frightening his father, this is what we're dealing with. This is a person who's not able to go into things, and it's almost like the book was autobiography was like an attempt to do it and yet put it to rest. It's done, and not look at it any more deeply. And I think that that's what you're talking about. He really did say those things, and when he was campaigning, he was very clear. He was clear that the Republicans had driven us into a ditch. He did not build a narrative, that's true, but I don't think he could build a narrative until he understood his own narrative. He was driven into a ditch and had to become a community organizer and had to go out of his way to have bipartisan disorder because he had to belong to groups because he felt like such an outsider.
Dr. Frank, here's another quote.
Very painful.
Here's another quote from your book. To some extent, the process is replayed with each sitting president. He represents parts of us that we split off and project onto him, a process that ultimately influences how we perceive and experience him.
Yes.
But Obama's not being known, this is during the 08 campaign, allowed observers to project parts of themselves onto him with more ease than any other presidential candidate. all of the 08 Democratic candidates were better known than Obama, who often joked about being unknown, a skinny, dark-skinned man with a funny-sounding name. Candidate Obama offered an element of the unknown that invited narcissistic identification, perhaps as a means to fill in the blanks and assuage our anxiety. And Dr. Frank, this is what I thought the very first time I heard him speak. I was in Washington in 2007 for the, it was called Take Back America Conference. And within a period of 2 days, all of the contenders spoke. Hillary Clinton, John Edwards, Speaker Pelosi was there. She's not a candidate, but she was one of the people who spoke. They were all blown off the stage by Barack Obama, who didn't come in and talk about Senate bill such and such or a specific policy. He came in with a very powerful overarching narrative. And I sat there and I said, what a blank screen. I can see people projecting onto him, because what he did is very skillfully identify problems without really proposing any solutions other than hope and change. And this permitted people who supported single-payer health care to say, he's my man. Even though the second time I heard him speak was at the Families USA Healthcare Conference in Washington, where people from Illinois tipped me off that he was originally a single-payer guy, but he had switched while he was a member of the state Senate in Illinois. And that was a very critical factor for me in understanding the way he could speak in a skillful manner that would permit us to imagine that he was actually speaking to our specific ideas and positions. And despite that, I steeled myself, Dr. Frank. I lowered my expectations as a result. And I'm still disappointed, because my lowered expectations were that this former constitutional law instructor would return us to constitutional rule and the fundamental rule of law. Those were my expectations, limited to that. And yet I'm still deeply disappointed by this man.
I agree with you. I mean, he is a person who has decided to be a cipher and a blank projection screen, and that at one point I thought that the reason why people didn't understand his use of the term change is because they didn't understand that he actually did mean change, but not the change we thought he meant. He just meant change into being able to listen to other people and respect and bring people together and see this overarching shared vision of his, because he thought he could be a community organizer for the United States. It's like the firstborn child wants to stop parental bickering by thinking that he can be the mediator in a parental fight. Well, you can't when you're a child, especially. It's hard enough for me as a couples therapist to be a mediator in a couples fight. He really can't do that, and yet he presented himself that way in order to get elected. He also knew, I think, and I'm assuming you agree, that he knew this was the best chance for a black to get elected president. Mm-hmm. Because so many people hated Bush, and that would trump their racism or their disinclination to vote for a black man or their disinclination to vote for a woman. I mean, this was the one chance in the near future, because people just hated Bush. I think that he knew that, and I think that he wanted to get as many people possibly seduced as possible. And he's always done this. He did this to become the head of Harvard, to be Harvard Law Review. This is what he does. And it has to do with this seductive mimicking of a fantasy of his father. His father, the story that's the organizing myth in Dreams from My Father, and it's from my father, the organizing myth in that book is the one that Gramps tells about going to a bar with the father, and the two of them are in a bar where the father is the only black face in a white bar, and one of the people at the bar drinking makes a racial remark, and the bar gets hushed, and it looks like there's going to be a huge fight between Obama Sr. and this guy. But instead, Obama Sr. walks up to the guy and talks about the how destructive racism, how terrible racism is. It not only demeans the person who's the victim, it also demeans the racist himself. It interferes with thinking, with cooperation. And the guy was so moved by Obama's speech, apparently, that he bought everybody a round of drinks. Well, that myth was what he was fed, which is the triumph of reason over hate, the triumph of reason and reasoning over destruction and hate. And that's just wrong. The guy was willing to listen for some reason, but that's where he comes from.
Dr. Frank, the projection, the seduction by Obama played out differently for different people. And I just want to cite my friend Nancy Walton. She and I worked in radio together for a number of years. She lives in Missoula, Montana. And when Obama campaigned there, she managed to, and I'm not referencing anything beyond the rope line, but she pulled a Lewinsky. She got right up there next to him. No skirt chasing was involved, but she had a 10-second encounter with him, and she told him that she loved him. And I want to ask you about this in particular, because you do address it a little bit in the book. There are people who went beyond just political projection and really developed a kind of voyeuristic or some sort of relationship in their own minds with this candidate.
I've never had an experience like this. I would say that there are many of my friends, my women friends, said to me when they knew I was writing this book, be nice to him. Don't be hard on him. I love him. I've never heard anything like this. He invites a maternal transference that people have to him that involves a wish to take care of him and protect him, that he's a skinny kid, that he really tries hard, that he's so earnest and so special, and he's got his big ears and that winning smile, that they want to take care of him. The two people who gave me book parties, two of my close friends, both would not give me a book party for this book. They gave me book parties for the Bush book, but they didn't want me, they were women, they didn't want to be linked with the possibility that I would be doing something that would be hurtful to their man. And that fits with your friend.
Yeah.
It's really shocking to me. And I think that people feel very taken in and adoring of him in a way that is like quite striking. And I think that he was able to do this also as a seducer, just what we were talking about before, because he has this ability to get people to like him. I mean, for this guy Lawrence Tribe, I think that's his name,
yeah,
how you pronounce it, to say that he was the best law student out of 30,000 law students he'd ever taught at Harvard, I mean, that's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, he is smart, but I mean, I can't understand where he got that from, except that there's a way in which he can be so seductive that he speaks on your level, and you really feel like you're his one and only when you talk to him. And my friends who have known him have all felt that way. It's an amazing quality.
And this affection that people have, misplaced, I think, in
yes,
its extreme, produces what I call the Leflon effect. And I don't know if I shared this with you in our previous conversation.
No, I love it already. Tell me.
But, you know, Reagan was the Teflon president, and it was Patsy Schroeder who tagged him with that name. We want to give her credit, the former congresswoman from Colorado.
I loved her.
And so when Obama became president, my theory is that he went to DuPont and they developed the new and improved Leflon. And that means that nothing that comes from the left sticks to him. And it's partly facilitated by projection and this extreme affection that people have, that he's the good guy. And he can expand presidential power. He can assert secrecy where it didn't exist before. He can continue to wiretap every phone call in the United States and intercept every email because he's a good guy. But they don't really sit back and say, well, what if President Perry attempted to use these same powers? Would you feel the same way?
No, and this is exactly what we're talking about. The hard light, the cold light of day involves facing facts, that we've had a destructive regime for 8 years, and that Obama, in wanting to turn the page, is continuing that destructiveness. It's going to go on, and then there will be a Rick Perry. I guarantee it. Somebody worse than Bush becoming president, because the original basic fundamental fractures and the fundamental disruptions in our society have not been addressed. And they need to be discussed, and they need to be brought out into the daylight, and Obama wants to turn the page. I agree with that. It's a very problematic thing. I think that he's counting on the fact nobody's going to vote for Mitt Romney. I'm not. The question is whether people are going to give him money or stay home. But I'm never going to vote for somebody like even Mitt Romney, let alone Perry. I can't imagine it. Mm-hmm. And I do want to vote because I feel like it's wrong not to.
I saw Adam leave the garden with an apple in his hand. Now you're out, what are you going to do? Plant my crops and pray for rain. Think I'll raise a little Cain. I'm an orphan and I'm only passing through. Passing through, passing through. Sometimes happy, sometimes blue. Glad that I ran into you. Tell the people that you saw me passing through. I saw Jesus on that cross on the hill called Calvary. Do you hate mankind for what they did to you? He said, speak of love, not hate, there's things to do, it's growing late. I've so little time and I'm just passing through. Passing through, passing through. Sometimes happy, sometimes blue, glad that I ran into you. Tell the people that you saw me passing through. I shivered with George Washington at Valley Forge that day. Why do your soldiers freeze here like they do? He said men will suffer, fight, even die for what is right, even though they know they're only passing through. Passing through, oh passing through. Sometimes happy, sometimes blue, glad that I ran into you. Tell the people that you saw me passing through. I was at Franklin Roosevelt's side just a while before he died. He said one world must come out of World War II. Yankee, Russian, white or tan, Lord, a man is just a man. We're all brothers and we're only passing through. Passing through, passing through. Sometimes happy, sometimes blue, glad that I ran into you. Tell the people that you saw me passing through. Well, I rode with old Abe Lincoln on that train to Gettysburg. I asked him, what are we gonna do? He said, every man must be unconditionally free, or there is no reason to be passing through. Passing through, oh, passing through. Sometimes happy, sometimes blue, glad that I ran into you. Tell the people that you saw me passing through. I'm passing through, just
you can hear great speeches sometimes and happy, interviews on accesssacramento.org. Or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
And now for something completely different.